Do you want to learn interesting psychological information in an easy, straightforward, and entertaining manner? Then you need to listen to The Shrink Is In, a podcast show produced and hosted by Dr. Howard Gurr. Dr. Gurr is a practicing licensed psychologist for more than 25 years in New York State, and now he is available to you on the internet. Now, here's Dr. Howard Gurr.
Hey, it's Dr. Gurr with another psychological podcast, and today I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Leah Klungdis about an issue that appears in my office rather frequently and probably every other mental health worker's office, and that is the question of divorce, specifically parents being concerned about how a divorce affects their children and the questions they have about how to handle their children during and after a divorce. So I thought it would be a good idea to have a specialist who deals with this all the time, and that's Leah. So before we meet Dr. Klungdis, let me give you some background. Dr. Klungdis, as I said, is a psychologist and is recognized as an authority on single parenting and relationship issues. She's the co-author of the award-winning book, The Complete Single Mother, which is the only comprehensive and best-selling self-help book ever written for single parents, and it's currently in its revised third edition. Dr. Klungdis's expertise comes from her personal experiences as a single parent, as well as her training and experience as a psychologist. Dr. Klungdis is in private practice in Locust Valley, Long Island, New York. She specializes in working with families during and after divorce, emphasizing solution-oriented approaches. Dr. Klungdis also recently co-founded and launched a new website for single mothers and fathers called singlemommyhood.com. And now, let's meet Dr. Klungdis. Leah, welcome to The Shrink Is In.
Thank you.
And today's topic is on divorce and how it affects the family and children. And the question really came out of the fact that in my practice, which I don't want to mention how long I've been practicing, but in my practice over the years, this has come up a lot, and primarily from mothers who are concerned about their children. What happens if the family breaks up, or if there's a divorce? And, you know, they're much more, you know, kind of in tune and intuitive with their children and worried about the impact. And so the first person who came to mind who I would talk about this was you. Having gone through that experience and having written the most best-selling self-help book on it called The Complete Single Mother, and also the co-founder of singlemommyhood.com, I thought you were the expert that I should go to.
Well, I'm delighted that you contacted me, because this question and concern from women thinking about divorce does come up very frequently and comes up correctly, because divorce is a massive life change and certainly can affect children.
Mm-hmm. You know, but before we get into the nuts and bolts here, I thought maybe we would kind of talk about your new project, singlemommyhood.com. Maybe you can give a little rundown of what that website's all about.
Singlemommyhood.com is a website which I've co-founded with Rachel Sarah of Single Mom Seeking. She's the number one single parent blogger in the United States. And both of us came to the conclusion independently that single parents, both moms and dads, needed a soft place to land every day and a place where they could share their thoughts and feelings and experiences about romance, dating, intimacy, topics that other single parent sites just don't seem to cover.
Mm. You know, I visited your site the other day and I thought it was very nice and light, which I think is important. I thought that's what you were going for, that kind of light approach.
Absolutely. We guarantee laughter every day. It's, again, a soft place to land, and we certainly invite all single parents to take a look and visit us often.
Great. So let me go back.
what happens? I mean, I know that there's no, you know, standard format for what happens when a family goes through a divorce, but clearly there are probably good things to do and bad things to do for parents in terms of handling their kids. And I guess, you know, my patients are always looking for, you know, what should I do and what should I avoid? And you know, the simple thing that I always tell them right off the bat is, you know, don't badmouth your partner. You know, don't, you know, use the kids as a foil to you know, side with you to, you know, beat up your husband or your wife, because that's going to backfire on you. And I was just wondering if there were other, you know, obvious things that people should look out for.
Certainly there are obvious things. First, I'd like to say that the best first step you can take if you're thinking about a divorce is get some professional help. Go to a psychologist or people experts. This is a time in your life that you need solution-oriented help, because your life is going to be changing in so many different and important ways. So your patient has already taken an appropriate step. Of course, bad-mouthing the children's father or mother is something absolutely to avoid, no matter what the age of the child. They certainly quickly understand that they are half that person. So that if you are telling them that your father or mother is a liar or no good, kids internalize that and say, oh, that means I must be half a liar or half no good. And that really is devastating and interrupts the important growing up tasks that they have in front of them.
Mm.
Before that, however, one of the other important things I think to keep in mind is to accept that, as I mentioned before, that divorce is a huge life change. And to think about where you want to be, where you want your life to go, and what you think your life, how you think your life will be different if you are divorced. Many people see divorce as an easy escape from whatever difficulties their life may be presenting, but fail to see that divorce in and of itself is a huge challenge.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think it the hugeness of this particular move and is overpowering for many people, because, you know, it's like, you know, marriage is something you're supposed to be successful at, you know, and many people see divorce as probably a sign that they failed, which in many respects I think is incorrect, but you know, that's it, like, hits their ego, no matter, you know, which part they are, whether they're, you know, someone initiating divorce or someone who, you know, their spouse is initiating divorce. It's almost like they failed at something that should have been, you know, a cakewalk.
It's a fundamental blow to everyone's self-esteem. Nobody walks down the aisle or runs to City Hall to get married thinking that they're going to be a divorce statistic. So there's a tremendous amount of, gee, I failed.
Right.
Gee, what did I do wrong? Gee, this isn't how this was supposed to turn out. And some paralysis, like, what do I do now? So, yes, absolutely, a huge challenge.
And then, of course, there's the probable change in their lifestyle and their family connections and relationships and, you know, their status maybe in their mind in the community or whatever they're coming up with. But there are some real changes that go on. You know, clearly the financial piece is there and lifestyle issues. So, you know, I understand all of that and why these, you know, individuals are clearly, you know, panicking. But the focus on the children is really the piece that you know, they bring to the table all the time. And not that that's always the issue, but I think it's an important issue that they could focus on and feel bad about. You know, what am I doing to my kids? And I guess my concern is that, you know, living in a situation where there's constant stress and tension is not healthy for their kids either. And when conflict ends, it's almost better than living in consistent warfare. So.
No, I couldn't agree more. It's certainly better to be from a, in quotes, broken home than continue to live in a broken home.
Mm-hmm.
I think something that that paralyzes and upsets many parents who are contemplating divorce is looking at the statistics about children post-divorce. You need to remember, however, that your child is not a statistic. Your child will be the product of what you make of this situation. We've already highlighted the importance of not bad-mouthing the other parent. But another strong recommendation I'd offer is as you and your former partner, former husband, former wife, make decisions financially and otherwise going forward, that you keep those decisions and plans a step behind what you tell the children. Your children don't need to be updated on the latest financial offer or updated on the possibility that maybe you might be moving or maybe you might be selling the house or the thousand maybes that happen in divorce. As stable and predictable as you can keep your kids' lives, the greater likelihood that they will thrive after the divorce, during the divorce and after the divorce. Very often this just takes the form of keeping bedtime and mealtime routines stable, just helping them with their homework, keeping their lives in some kind of routine and rhythm will certainly go a long way. You may feel that your life is, and correctly so, that your life is unbalanced and hectic and crazy, but if you can keep your kids' lives somewhat stable, this is one of the most positive things you can do in the long run to help your kids survive this crisis.
Just want to remind the audience, I'm talking to Dr. Leah Klungnis, who's a psychologist who has written the best-selling health book for single parents called The Complete Single Mother and is now the owner of singlemommyhood.com or co-owner of singlemommyhood.com, a website for single parents. So let me go back, Leah. And I think this is probably the hardest part, which is that even though parents might be divorced, what you're really saying is that they should be still parents and they should parent their children as if they kind of weren't divorced. They were on the, trying to be on the same page and trying to set up the same standards and trying to be as rational and reasonable as possible.
All of those things. Because as much as they can dig down and find the best of themselves to continue to co-parent is the greatest gift they can give their kids. Sometimes feelings get in the way. In fact, very often feelings can get in the way. Just using email, just communicating in that manner is often a good start. But keeping the rules and expectations as similar as possible between the two households as that situation unfolds, when your one parent is having parenting time with the child, just things like keeping standards on simple things the same, you know, toothbrushing, homework, bedtime, less junk food, all of these kinds of things. It all pays off in the end, but it calls for digging down and finding the best of yourself in a personal crisis.
Yeah, trying to separate your maybe anger or negative feelings towards your ex-spouse from how you handle your children, it's not that easy a task. Over the years, I've seen a lot of people have difficulty with that concept.
Well, think about it this way. Letting your children slide on toothbrushing because you know that's going to make your former spouse angry is not going to have any impact on your former spouse. It's going to hurt and harm your children in a very definite way. Same with junk food, same with letting them stay up. Whatever the hot button is with the other parent, if you act out in that way, the people who suffer are the people you love most dearly, and those are your kids.
Yeah, you know, the traditional standard scenario I get is the mother would say to me, you know, I'm the bad one. I'm the one who has to make the discipline decisions. I'm the one who gets them during the week for homework. I'm the one that has to nag them to change and get ready for school. And he gets them on the weekends, and it's playtime and free time, and they stay up late, and they watch movies, and they eat junk food. And then I get a Monday morning, and I have to start retraining them all over again. And that scenario is a lot more common than I like.
That scenario is way too common. In fact, I like to refer to it as Disney Dad. It's all fun and games and junk food, just as you outlined. But I would offer what typically happens in that kind of situation. Short term, it's great, and Dad has a ball, and it's all fun, and Mom gets to be the Wicked Witch of toothbrushing. But as kids get older, they really do see that dichotomy, that difference very clearly. And so when it comes down then to important things like what courses am I going to take in high school? What about college application? Gee, do I want to join the military? I have a girlfriend and this problem has come up, or I'm not getting along with my friends, or should I join this sports team? I mean, all the questions that kids face growing up, they look to the stable parent. They don't look to the fun parent. Mm-hmm. And these fun parents find themselves really out of the loop. It's like, fine to go and have a hamburger with Dad, let's say, and go to a game or, do whatever. But when it comes down to the really serious kinds of parenting talks that you want to have, those kids typically look to the parent that tried to steer them on the right course, tried to make them brush their teeth and not eat junk food and get enough sleep and all of those kinds of things. So it's a short-term strategy that doesn't really have any long-term payoff.
I see that a lot in situations where there's a divorce, where one parent takes a tact that is, from my perspective, more self-absorbed. In other words, I'm making decisions because this is how I want things, or because this is what suits my schedule or my needs, and doesn't really take into consideration the child's needs. In other words, makes the child conform to their schedule as opposed to the parent conforming to the child's needs and schedule. And in the long run, that backfires as well. Because when the kid's now 15 or 16 or 17 and they have the choice of kind of hanging around with their own friends who might be, where the other parent, resides, where the, custodial parent resides, that second parent loses out. Do you see that as well?
I see that very often. And in fact, I see it happening sooner than 15. It usually starts happening when kids are 11 or 12 and they start having extracurricular, sports schedules and long-term school projects and things like that. And children will do as they have learned to do. So they sometimes, and we certainly don't want to badmouth dads here, but that's the usual situation where they live with Mom and see Dad over the weekend and maybe for dinner during the week. Is, they've heard Dad say, oh, that doesn't fit into my schedule. I can't see you this weekend because I'm going golfing, or I'm doing this, or I, me. And the kids say, it isn't really convenient for me to go to Dad's because the school project I'm working on is here, or I want to go to this sleepover, or I'm invited to this bar mitzvah, or, something. And so it becomes like a turnabout situation. And the child suddenly says, I'm too busy to see you.
Right.
I don't have time to see you. And then the weekend parent is shocked and sometimes kind of devastated. But that's the situation that they've set up. That's the behavior that they've modeled. The child has taken them as a role model and starts doing what's good for them. And often that doesn't include the Disney dad.
Right. I know. And I, in the long run, I think that's just a plan that's bound to backfire. And I try to explain that to my clients, but, they don't see it because it's so far down the road for them. They have young kids or they're just not looking at that issue. And I say, look, you're going to lose in the long run if this is the tact you take, because your kid's going to get the message that, their needs aren't as important as yours. And sooner or later, their lives are going to get very busy and complicated, and they're going to not have time for you. So it's it gets kind of messy, but, you know, unfortunately, sometimes people just don't listen. You know, they come to therapy and they sit and they hear, but they don't necessarily do the things that we need them to do. As psychologists, we need them to do all the work and make all the changes and change their behavior, because they could talk to us forever. But I find if they don't change, not much goes on. It's different.
Change is the greatest life challenge there is. And I think that's where people who are divorcing, that's my primary message. Everything in your life is going to change. Mm-hmm. And you need to do two things at the same time. That is, think about what you want and your new goals and the new opportunities you need to pursue. But at the same time, you need to stay grounded for your kids, put your needs aside, and be there for your kids in the ways they need you to be there, really depending on their age. And I think a big fallacy that many parents have with whom I've worked is they think because their kids are in middle school or high school that they're kind of grown up. And, you know, they're flexible, they're resilient, you know, it'll all be fine. Mm-hmm. And it won't necessarily all be fine. Those kids are devastated by what's happened too and need an extra measure of support and comfort. And don't need to see mom and dad or mom or dad you know, rediscovering their own adolescence, right. You know, openly dating, openly spending tons of time on the cell phone, when these kids need them to be just that much more present in their lives.
Yeah, I think they get deluded by the fact that their children who are now teenagers, you know, can talk intelligently and use the correct vocabulary and kind of can spit back you know, what they hear, but they don't understand that emotionally those kids are still kids and they're still needy. And even though they could talk a good game, it doesn't mean they fully comprehend or could handle what they're talking about.
I think the media has given our kids a real veneer of kind of pseudo sophistication. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about hooking up and all kinds of other things, but do they really understand the emotional consequences? Likely no. Are they in touch with their feelings and really understand what's going on? No. Just as you said, they talk a good game, but they're often typically just very needy and still kids in very fundamental ways, still little kids.
Yeah, I don't want to age myself, but when I watched TV as a kid, generally – the parents had the answers and the kids were idiots. And the shows, the sitcoms generally were some kid got himself into trouble or got herself into trouble. And within the next, 22 minutes of TV show, somehow the parents magically figured out how to fix the situation. Now, it looks to me when I watch sitcoms with kids, it's the parents who are idiots and the kids who know what's going on. And it's completely reversed, that the kids are in charge and the parents are doddering fools. It amazes me, you know, especially the younger kids. Or if you watch some of the cartoons, the earlier cartoons, even like The Simpsons, you know, the kids, the little daughter is smarter than everybody else in that show.
The Simpsons are a great example, and I can promise you I'm not going to date myself either, but I've had that same experience watching television. And how frightening for a child to look around and think, I'm the one with the knowledge. I'm the one that should come up with the game plan. And they really get that, they get that message from the media, and they may get that message also from parents and who begin to use the psychologist term, adultize them.
Right.
Start confiding in them as peers, start sharing their dilemmas. I get real concerned when I hear moms or dads refer to their child as their best friend. You know, he's my best friend, mm-hmm. or she's my best girlfriend. We can just talk about anything. What a burden for kids.
Right.
What a burden for kids. Kids are going to have many friends in their lives, but they're only going to have one mom, one mom or dad. And it's really important to keep that role and remember what they can truly absorb and what's really a burden. You might feel better telling them, but believe me, your kids aren't going to feel better.
You know, what I see, because I deal with a lot of kids too, is that the kids, and it's not just, even divorce situations. It's in intact families as well. The kids are empowered and have too much control that they don't know what to do with. And they're what I call the entitled. And they have the entitlement to get what they want, when they want, and how they want it. And it just ruins their childhood to a certain extent because they're not children anymore. They're like little mini adults. And the whole system, including school systems, haven't really established that, we are the adults, we are the parents, we make the rules. Because the kids are entitled to too much. I don't know if you see that as well, but it's scary in my practice that these kids are just, as I said, they're just not kids anymore.
I don't know how we got to that point, but I see it as well. I hear parents say, well, he or she doesn't want to go there. So, we stopped, they don't really like going to church, so we don't go. Or, they don't like eating at this restaurant, or I just don't cook vegetables because the kids won't eat them.
Right.
I mean, who's in charge here? Who is in charge there? And then you see these kids not able really to do the developmentally appropriate things down the road, like successfully separate from their parents, have a good college experience, and go off and be on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And we see lots of that too. If parents could only remember that if you leave kids to their own devices, they will make up lots of different rules. Like if they start a club or a team, there'll be all kinds of rules. Mm-hmm. Because the rules make them feel safe. Makes them enjoy the activity. They're looking for structure. They're looking for guidance, and finding it on TV or on the internet, not so much. It's really best if it comes from the adults in their lives that they can trust.
That's what I tell my kids. Nobody's going to give you multiple chances, and no one's going to go out there and fight your battle for you. You have to take care of things. And interesting, I have kids in my practice over the years who would tell me things like, in school, the principal's afraid of my mother, or, I don't have to listen to that person. Like, for example, I had a kid many, many, many years ago who said, do you know how much Mrs. Smith makes, referring to his teacher? And I said, no, I have no idea. And he said, well, I think she makes X, and my father makes five times what she makes, so I don't have to listen to her. Or I'm bringing my attorney into school. Really? There's 12-year-old kids telling me he's bringing his attorney into school. These are things I never would even have thought of as a kid. They wouldn't have occurred to me to even question any of these things. If I got in trouble in school, more than likely I would try to not tell my parents I got in trouble in school rather than go home and tell my parents I got in trouble in school so that they would go in and fight my battle for me.
Well, likely if I'd gotten in trouble in school, and I don't think I got in too much trouble, I would have been in twice as much trouble. When I got home. I don't know where we got. I hear this frequently myself. My mom sent the teacher an email and said that this assignment was just too hard and she's not going to do it. We're not going to do it.
Right.
The teacher isn't allowed to do this, or the teacher, teachers really don't make that much money, or just all the same things you said. I just don't think parents stop and realize where this is going. In fact, I read some pieces in Wall Street Journal and media outlets like that, where parents are trying to talk to prospective employers and can't understand why the prospective employer doesn't want to talk to them, wants to talk to the job candidate who happens to be their child. I mean, like, where does this insanity end?
It's the extension of the helicopter parent.
Right. Now zooming into the workplace.
Yeah.
And very unwelcome.
Very unwelcome, yes, as it should be. Anyway, Leah, I want to thank you for being a guest on The Shrink Is In and for your information. I want to remind the audience that Leah Klungnis is a psychologist who wrote The Complete Single Mother and is the co-founder of SingleMommyhood.com. And I want to thank you again and hope to talk to you somewhere down the line on another single parent issue that we could discuss on the show.
Great. Hope to do the same.
And again, this is Dr. Howard Gurr for The Shrink Is In.
You have been listening to The Shrink Is In, and your host has been Dr. Howard Gurr. If you want to learn more about Dr. Gurr, go to his website at www.drsgurr.com.